What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
Picasso knows your vacation home is your best home. It's the place that brings family and friends together. It's where you're the best version of yourself. Picasso makes it easy to co-own a luxury vacation home in amazing locations. Listings start at $200K for 1/8 ownership. Picasso does all the work for you. Luxury furnishings, maintenance, billing, scheduling, and more. And you can resell on Picasso's marketplace anytime, historically for a 10% gain. Visit Picasso to see thousands of listings. That's PACASO.com.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Brought to you by Toyota. Let's go places. Welcome to Forward Thinking.
Hey there, everyone, and welcome to Forward Thinking, the podcast that looks to the future and says there was a young sailor who looked through the glass. I'm Jonathan Strickland.
I'm Lauren Vogelbaum.
And I'm Joe McCormick.
Guys, now, if I were to give you just a term, just saying Starship Enterprise, what are some of the ways you would describe the interior of that starship?
It's so perfect and
immaculate.
Yeah,
dustbusters everywhere.
Yeah. Space dustbusters of the future.
Yeah, I was looking for lens flare, but
okay.
My Starship Enterprise doesn't involve that much lens flare.
Okay, so clearly Abrams has nothing to do with Lauren's Starship Enterprise.
Yeah, if you think about the inside of the ships in Star Trek, they look disgustingly clean.
Well, not all the ships in Star Trek, though.
That's true.
All the Federation ships.
Right.
Yeah, that's right. If you go, you look inside the Klingon ships, they look really grungy. And I don't know if it's just bad lighting or if there's like filth on the surfaces.
I always assumed it was some kind of like, since the Klingons to me were always a terrific parallel for communist Russia, that it was clearly some kind of like in communist Russia, Klingons. I can't really finish that statement.
Right.
I don't have anything
clear. Dirts you.
Yeah.
It's one of the, exactly. The machine oils you. That would be the way I'd go. It turns out that, when we think about the Star Trek universe, whenever we're thinking about those Federation ships, we have those incredibly pristine, clean ships. This is not the only example of futuristic worlds where everything is spotless and immaculate, right? I mean, there's the spaceship on 2001, or the space station, I guess I should say, 2001, absolutely spotless.
I would say, especially if you look into earlier science fiction, they envision the future as an extremely clean place. I think one thing that was a sort of revolution in later sci-fi depictions is they sort of dirtied up the future a bit. That's something you saw once you had Star Wars and Blade Runner and stuff like that.
Yeah, and Fifth Element. Although technically Star Wars is not the future. That happened a long time ago.
Well, whatever.
Right. Although lots of depictions in books, I mean, you can't see the grit. And I think that a lot of this was also design elements more so. I mean, it was style over the substance of a concept of the future. Not that something like The Fifth Element isn't very stylish, but Hyland, for example, certainly never. Sometimes he did, but he usually didn't describe his futurescapes as being pristine.
Well, no, I would tie it probably to an idea, a sort of utopian idea about the future, like in Star Trek. I mean, when you look at Roddenberry's vision of the future, he has this vision that's generally better than today.
Very optimistic.
Yeah. Right. And again, that's where that kind of Klingon thing comes in, because the Federation was this utopia and Klingon society was portrayed as very much not.
Now, however, I will counter that by saying there are several dystopian versions of the future that are also very, very clean. And in this case, the clean is
world.
Yeah, it's meant to be more sterile.
A Clockwork Orange.
Right.
Yeah.
So these are worlds where the cleanliness is a symptom of something that's actually rotten in that world, where it's not, you know, it's not that everything is beautiful and lovely. It's that things are cold and impersonal.
I would say that the association between cleanliness and a sort of utopian vision of the future is understandable once you look at the history of sanitation and sterilization, especially as it comes to medicine and society.
Sure.
Because you can sort of see an arc that, oh, wow, learning how to clean up our medical facilities and our homes and things like that, that was actually a big step forward for human beings.
Right. And that's really what we wanted to talk about in this podcast is this. I mean, it seems kind of odd, but this is actually inspired from one of our listeners sent in a suggestion. Now, his suggestion was about a very specific thing that we're going to address in a future episode, but in general, it had to do with this concept of cleaning and cleanliness. And we kind of got into this discussion about, you know, what is the future of this? Is there such a thing as too clean? In what realms is this super hyper cleanliness necessary? And are there anywhere it's something that would be a problem? Because again, in these different versions of the future, we have the ones where cleanliness is an example of an idyllic society and others where cleanliness is an example of some sort of dystopia.
And of course, in order to discuss that, we really need to look at how the technology of cleanliness has developed over the past century or so, because it is very much a technology or a series of technologies.
Sure. Yeah.
I'd say we should go back a few centuries.
Sure.
To the idea of, say, germ theory.
Yeah, we can go back even further before we understood what germ theory was, in fact, because there were some observations that led to the formulation of germ theory, right?
Yeah, let's talk about Ignaz Semmelweis.
Semmelweis, yeah, a pioneer in antiseptics. So Semmelweis had a friend named Jacob, or Jacob, if you prefer the Anglicanized version. But Jacob, he was a doctor who had performed an autopsy. And in the process of performing this, accidentally cut himself and then subsequently came down with a terrible fever and died. And Semmelweis was obviously distressed by this. He also being a physician, was very much upset that his fellow physician passed away and passed away from an illness. And he also was observing something unusual to him. It was that in his area, women who were giving birth, who were assisted by midwives, were having more, having better success with their babies surviving childbirth. But the women who were giving birth being assisted by medical students had a higher rate of infant mortality. And so Semmelweis decided to look into this. And, you know, it was kind of his friend's death that sort of sparked his imagination as he looked around at what was going on. And he determined that the medical students who were assisting in childbirths were the same medical students who were performing autopsies, and that perhaps they were corrupting the childbirth some way with something that they were carrying from the dead bodies. They had no concept of germs at this time.
Believe it or not, that these people didn't necessarily know that you should wash your hands in between handling something horrible and delivering a baby.
And so he ended up demanding that medical students follow a protocol which would involve them washing their hands with a chlorinated antiseptic solution. And then they saw mortality rates drop significantly. So it became clear that the practice of midwives who weren't coming into contact with dead bodies, like the medical students were better than the ones that the medical students were following. And this was a big step. I mean, it was one of those things where, you know, today we take it for granted, but at the time it was revolutionary. Well, moving on from washing your hands, just the idea of water sanitation was something that came to people fairly late. The idea that they needed to be really careful about the water that they drank, and that, in fact, that could cause illness if they weren't careful. So a Dr. John Snow, who, as I put in my notes, obviously did not know nothing, it's for all you Game of Thrones fans out there, found in the early 19th century, he was trying to figure out a cholera outbreak in London. And there was a specific neighborhood in London where there were a lot of deaths due to cholera, and he was starting to really look into what was causing it. And he took a very kind of a forensic approach to this. In fact, made a map and plotted out where people were, and he figured out that there was this one water pump that was somehow contaminated with cholera. And at the time, this was a big departure from the common belief, which was that cholera was spread through some form of noxious gas that escaped from the sewers, that it wasn't something that they were ingesting. So anyway, Dr. Snow was able to convince the city government to shut down a particular water pump in this region. He had determined that this one water pump was somehow contaminated, and so they removed the handle. Thus, you could not pump water out of this water pump. And as a result, the cholera outbreak started to disappear. People stopped coming down with cholera. And part of that was also because there was a general decrease in population in that region, not just from the deaths, which obviously that would decrease it, but people were fleeing because sure. They were worried that this was somehow a tainted area and they would catch cholera if they stayed around. But even taking that out of consideration, they saw a significant drop. And that is kind of what led them to the conclusion that water supply was really, really important. And it was very important to have a clean water supply to avoid illness. And it wouldn't be until 1870 when we get Louis Pasteur sending out this idea of the germ theory of illness, that illness can be caused by microorganisms that are too small to see with the naked eye. But that is what truly revolutionized medicine, because now people knew the reason why you had to go through this process of sterilizing everything was because things you cannot see could, in fact, kill you.
Yeah, and apparently somebody named Joseph Lister read old Louis Pasteur.
Yeah.
Joseph Lister promoted antiseptic surgery in the late 19th century, mm-hmm. and he experimented with antimicrobial chemicals. So he would sterilize surgical instruments, wound sites, and operating theaters with stuff like carbolic acid, which was actually quite effective. Carbolic acid, though, also known as phenol, is highly toxic. It's not so much used anymore. Now we've got other stuff we use.
Yes. And also the antiseptic Listerine is named after him. Not invented.
Is that true?
Not invented. Yes. Not invented by him.
Oh,
but
just
named,
sort of
named in honor,
Dr.
Lister.
Okay. Yeah. So now antiseptic surgery and hospital facilities are basically the norm, or at least they're what we're striving for, whether or not it's actually achieved. And as a result of all this work, the medical field sort of put in place standard procedures for how to keep operating rooms clean, how to keep hospital rooms clean, what you should do to your instruments.
All right, so we understand that it's important to be very clean in medical procedures now. We understand that it's important to sterilize equipment, to wash your hands. What are the ways right now that medicine, what are the procedures that medicine follows to ensure this?
Okay, so currently there are a bunch of methods of sterilization of things. So if you're cleaning off like a site on a person's body, you might rub them with alcohol or with an iodine solution.
Mm-hmm.
If you're sterilizing instruments, one of the most common things you would use is steam, actually. Steam is super great. In fact, it's probably like the best thing to use. Superheated steam, hot moisture in an autoclave, so this little like locked steamer box to it'll get things clean, it'll penetrate fabrics, it'll really cut through and kill pretty much everything, kill or incapacitate.
This is also why you want to make sure if you're ever getting a tattoo or your ears pierced or something else pierced that the establishment has an autoclave that they use to clean their instruments, and that they use, you know, one-time use instruments for things that are disposable and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. There are also instruments that are not tolerant of heat or maybe not tolerant of water.
Mm-hmm.
And in those cases, there are chemicals that you can use. You can use, say, ethylene oxide, parasitic acid, or hydrogen peroxide gas plasma. Those are three things I read about that are basically in use today, or at least being tested.
So these methods that you're talking about, killing off germs, obviously it's solved all the problems, right? So now we've got these perfectly safe medical theaters where there's no worry whatsoever of
contamination
or infection.
Nope.
What?
Nope. Okay, so hospitals are obviously a lot better than they used to be. You know, before Joseph Lister, I think it was probably just pretty common. You go get an operation done and then, oh, you have ward fever. I don't know what caused this, but now you're dead.
Yeah. American Horror Story season 2 really taught me a lot about the various hospital conditions of the past.
Yeah. And they were using unclean instruments. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was just, it's gross. Now we're doing a lot better job, but still we have not gotten rid of hospital associated infections. That's what they're called now. HAIs.
Certainly.
They did not disappear after the revolution in antiseptic medical care. In fact, I found a CDC source from 2002 that estimated the number of hospital-associated infections in U.S. hospitals. So this is just in the U.S. And basically it came to the conclusion that there were 1.7 million hospital-associated infections.
Yeesh. Part of the problem that we're talking about here is one that we talked about in our antibiotics episode, which is that in hospitals, sometimes through the use of drugs that are or drugs or other methods that are meant to kill off bacteria, some of the bacteria survive and become more hardy and difficult to kill, and that therefore hospitals can sometimes contain strains of superbugs that get passed around and are difficult to get out.
Yeah, because then the drugs you would use to take care of such a infection are no longer effective because they've built up a resilience to that drug.
Right. And I mean, you know, and certainly things are a lot better than they used to be, like we've said. I always think of that moment in Undiscovered Country, which I'm sorry is a terrible reference to make in a science fiction show. But when Bones, you know, is here in the 20th century medical center and he's just horrified by everything. He's like, you savages, what are you doing?
Technically, that's Star Trek IV, Voyage Home, when they go to rescue Chekhov, who's passed out.
Did I say the wrong thing? I totally said the wrong thing. I did say Undiscovered Country.
Which is more about Klingon medical care, which is also complicated because they have two hearts.
It's very warm in here, guys.
It is very warm in here.
Well, I wanted to talk about one interesting other way I found of disinfecting in hospital facilities, which is using UV rays.
Oh, yes. I've seen this sort of stuff where you get like the little UV chamber that can douse a device or instrument or even like your toothbrush with UVs.
Well, I'll do you one better.
Yeah. What if you need to disinfect an entire room?
Well, so you could wipe down all the surfaces with alcohol or with some kind of antiseptic solution. But that doesn't always work, and also that is time-consuming, and people don't always get all the surfaces they need to. There is, in fact, a disinfecting robot. I read about this. It's manufactured by a company called Xenex, and it's a little R2-D2 buddy, and you just wheel him on into a room, and you shut the door behind you, and it uses a pulsed xenon UV light that zaps microorganisms, and it will basically kill them. It disrupts microbial life at the cellular level, so different UV frequencies can damage RNA, DNA, cell walls, internal cellular structures, and it can do a whole room in about 15 minutes. You put it in like three different positions for 5 minutes apiece with the door closed because you don't want to be in there staring at it with it destroying your eyes.
Sure.
And
yeah, ultraviolet light can have a nasty effect on us, especially if we have prolonged exposure.
Yeah, it actually makes use of UVC light, which is the kind of UV light that is usually blocked by our atmosphere when it's sent in by the sun. And supposedly this thing is pretty darn good.
I like to imagine that when this thing is active, even though ultraviolet light is outside the visible spectrum, we can't see it, right? But I like to imagine when it's active, if you were outside the hospital, you just see these crazy disco flashing lights coming out the window and you hear the Mos Eisley Cantina song playing. But maybe that's just me.
But hey, I want to talk about something else about the future of cleanliness, which is that it doesn't just matter for hospitals.
No.
Because the more we get down into miniaturization, mm-hmm. whether it's in the medical field or in industry, electronics, mm-hmm. research, whatever it is, having contamination can really cause problems.
Absolutely. So in the manufacturing process for electronics, when you're trying to create semiconductors, when you're creating microprocessor chips, you're talking about working with components that are on the nanoscale. So it's not unusual now to have a computer with a microprocessor where the transistors, the individual components on it, may measure 45 nanometers across or even less. That's super tiny, right? I mean, this is the scale at which quantum effects start to take hold. So it doesn't necessarily behave the same way it would on the classic macro scale.
Which basically means that if you've got, I mean, we're not talking about germs. Most of the electronics that I know about at any rate will not get an infection from a germ like that. But tiny specks of dust could very much screw your
oh, yeah.
mojo
up. You could have an entire die of semiconductor material ruined if there are dust particles inside the room. You want to control for that as much as possible. So as we get to this point where the precision is really important, something like a dust particle could completely dwarf the components on a chip. And if it were to fall in place, it would ruin it. And of course, you know, that's money, right? You're spending money to make this stuff, and everyone that's ruined, you cannot sell. So you lose money on the deal.
Yeah, I mean, on those scales, having a piece of dust in your semiconductor or whatever it might be at the nanoscale would basically be like having a rock in an engine block.
Yeah, it's throwing a monkey wrench in, yeah.
Causing major problems.
Absolutely.
But how the heck do you rule out a tiny, tiny particle, this microns?
There are a couple different things you got to do. Well, one, you've got to construct a room that is sealed, so that you can seal it off from the rest of the building so that you're not getting air drafts pulling in more dust particles from somewhere else. It's like having an airlock system, really. Secondly, you have to have an air filtration system that can recycle the air in that room and filter it out very efficiently. So we're talking like replacing all the air in that room regularly through this filtration system. And most of these clean rooms that, you know, that's what they're called in the industry, where these microprocessor manufacturing machines exist, are able to do that frequently, like several times an hour, essentially. So you're putting all the air through this filtration system over and over again to remove any particulates that happen to be floating through it. So you end up with like an incredibly pure air or atmosphere within there, not like pure oxygen, but as in there's no particulate matter floating around. And on top of that, you make everyone play dress up.
Yeah, I'd imagine you don't just walk in from the parking lot.
No. I mean, obviously, like, you know, anything on you, anything like in your skin particles, your hair, or any dust that's on you would
clearly
be a problem.
Large amounts of pet fur.
Yeah.
In my case, too. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And in my case, too, now.
Oh, congratulations,
that's right. Yeah,
Joe.
Just got
I'm a recent dog owner.
So,
but anyway.
Which would mean you would be.
I'm not making any nanotechnology.
No,
in my
you
house.
Would not be allowed inside the clean room in that state. So, what you have to do is you have to put on a special kind of suit. They kind of look like hazmat suits. They're called bunny suits in the industry. That's really what they're called. But it's something that covers you from head to toe so that you can enter the room and not contribute any sort of particulate matter that would otherwise corrupt the system as it's going through this stuff. Now, most of the time, these manufacturing processes, I mean, they're automated, obviously. When you're talking about creating stuff on the nanoscale, you don't have someone in there doing it by hand. That would be impossible. But, you know, you do occasionally have to put humans into the system to do various things. So
I'd imagine, especially if you're doing research.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, so it's one of those things where whenever a person does have to go in, they have to, you know, get suited up and everything, make sure that they're not going to corrupt it. So, yeah, and it turns out it's not just in electronics that this is important. There's a lot of different industrial processes that require precision and cleanliness together. And, in fact, the more precise you get, the more important that cleanliness is, because if it's a really super tiny mechanism, those parts have to fit together exactly, and even just a little bit of grease or oil could make it so they don't set properly. Right. So what do you do? I mean, as it turns out, if you make especially tiny little metal pieces, components, often grease or oil is part of that process. How do you clean something so tiny that you can't just, you know, take a brush and brush it off, or take a cloth and wipe it off, because it's far too small for that? What would be your next best approach?
I have no idea. Some kind of gas?
Exactly. A gas. Or at least you start with a gas, but you compress it and lower the temperature down so that you convert it into a solid, specifically carbon dioxide. According to Science Daily, there's one company that's been looking at carbon dioxide and actually using it to cool it down into what they call snow crystals. And they blast the various components. Let's say that it's a clock mechanism that has really super tiny components in it, and you want to get all the grease and oil off of those parts before you assemble it. They would blast it with this these little snow particles, which are enough to knock off. It absorbs all the oil. It absorbs grease. It can knock off dust without damaging the components themselves. That obviously is very important. You can't just sandblast these things because you don't want to damage them. Plus, then you have sand everywhere. So... This is used to shake loose any particles and to absorb oil and grease. And because it's solid carbon dioxide, it almost instantly converts right back into gas. It goes straight from solid to gas, which, if you remember the great movie Real Genius, is totally awesome when you can make something do that.
It's like an evaporating ShamWow.
Yes. Yes, it is. It is a ShamWow that disappears in front of your very eyes. But it's a really cool solution, literally. But it's a really cool solution because it allows you to clean off these little components, convert over to gas, so you don't have to worry about any kind of damage due to moisture. It's not going to get any of the components wet. It just goes straight from solid to gas. So it's really a neat an innovative approach to cleaning these tiny little components.
Yeah, I can imagine how clean rooms and clean industrial and research facilities are going to become even more important and widespread once nanotechnology becomes a more widespread field.
Absolutely. Yeah, because anything could contaminate the sample.
Exactly.
Also, I imagine that this would have some kind of crossover back to the medical field. I mean, any time that you've got methods of purifying a situation, a environment or a piece of equipment, that's a good thing, right?
Okay, so our need to have things clean in a lot of various settings is getting more pronounced, and we're keeping up, basically. We're getting better technologies to keep things clean on a smaller and smaller scale. But should we be worried that we're getting too clean? Because I remember back maybe 10, 15 years ago, there were a whole bunch of magazine articles that had headlines like, you know, is your house too clean for your kids? Are you making your kids sick with all of your cleanliness? It was that sort of like mom baiting attack kind
sure.
of
yeah.
kind of headline that you still see today.
News panic kind of thing. Yeah.
But there was a lot of stuff about this. And I at the time, I didn't really look into it because I was too young to care. But
it's called the hygiene hypothesis. And it's based around this concept that getting things too clean has messed with our immune systems. And this has to do with allergies, because allergies are really just immune system responses to what's otherwise harmless stuff.
Right.
You know, certain foods or pollen or mold, animal saliva, which, by the way, it's the saliva, usually not the dander itself.
Exactly, yeah.
In general,
like
that contains more of the allergen.
If a cat licks you and you're allergic to cats, you might end up with a nasty little rash exactly where the cat licked you.
I, in fact, get that all the time.
It's
great.
Me too.
But at any rate, what happens here is that your immune system attacks the allergen in your blood by producing an antibody that the allergen binds to. But the antibody is also attached to this particular kind of blood cell called a mast cell. And when all three of these things link up, the mast cell is triggered to produce chemicals, including histamine, which causes the symptoms of an allergic reaction.
So essentially what we're saying here is that your immune system no longer has to do the work it would have had to do if you were surrounded by germs all the time. So like the fact that we have managed to reduce some of the microorganisms around us, particularly if we're in a hyper clean home, that this hyper clean realm means that since our immune system doesn't have to work against microorganisms, it gets bored and starts a fight club.
Yeah, that's, I mean, essentially, or furthermore, that your immune system won't be primed, it won't be strong enough to deal with microbes when they do come around, and that therefore they won't be able to kill those off efficiently.
Right. And it's interesting in our notes here, the tendency toward having allergies is genetic, but specific allergies are not inherited. This explains why my parents are able to eat lobster to their heart's content, and I am not.
Oh, you're allergic to lobster?
Deadly allergic to lobster.
I'm allergic to red lobster.
I am amused, Joe, but I am, in fact, I am seriously, severely allergic to lobster. Like, if I eat lobster within an hour, I'm having some really nasty symptoms.
Do you turn into Kirby?
I kind of. I did. Mm-hmm. I definitely get pink and puffy, and then I stop breathing. So that's a problem.
Yeah, that's bad. I once wore a lobster costume for, I mean, completely legitimate editorial work purposes. I can tell you the story about that one later. And it was sort of itchy.
I once broke out in a rash at a B-52s concert.
There goes a narwhal.
At any rate, so do you guys, do either of you have any severe allergies?
Not really. My wife has really bad allergies.
Yeah.
I don't have any anaphylactic allergies, yeah. But I do have some like seasonal pollen related kind of things,
right,
and cats,
right.
Cat dander
will
get me.
The only two anaphylactic ones I have are lobster and alcohol. So Al's lobster and liquor shack is way off limits.
Right out.
I can't go
But
there.
You can eat as many oak tags as you want.
Yes.
Okay, but so an interesting thing that research has been done about by the National Institutes of Health, no less, is that more people are experiencing allergies recently than they were in the past. One particular report said that over 50% of Americans surveyed from 1988 to 1994 said that they were sensitive to at least one allergen, which is 2 to 5 times the rate from a survey conducted in 1976 to 1980.
Right. So one of the suggestions for what is contributing to this perceived increase in allergies is that the hygienic practices that we have put into place may, in fact, be putting things out of whack. Right.
That hygiene hypothesis that that sterile environments actually lead to more illness. And this isn't just in the antibacterial way, which, again, we talked about in that previous episode, where we're not just creating superbugs. It's that our immune systems are basically bored or underdeveloped.
Right. So the thing is that this is not a hypothesis that has gone unchallenged. There are plenty of arguments against it, or at least saying that the cleanliness of our environment may be a factor, but is probably not the major factor.
Well, I would just like to point out that our homes are not sterile. I mean, they might be cleaner than they were 100 years ago, but they're not sterile.
But the perception based upon that mom bait, you know, fear mongering we talked about earlier was that if you don't have a clean home, your kid will get sick. And then it was, if you have too clean a home, you're making your kids get allergies.
Part of this whole theory is that there's a lot of good germs, microbial flora and fauna that evolved in tandem with us and that are not pathogenic, are not going to hurt us, and that those are also being killed off in addition to the bad bugs that we're trying to get rid of with all of the Lysol and vacuuming and I don't know what else really.
Throwing everything in the autoclave.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Come on, Billy, it's time for your autoclave.
Mr. No. Autoclave!
Please, no.
And there is a lot of actual research involved. This hypothesis was proposed back in 1989, and since then there have been a bunch of reports that seem to indicate that it's a legit thing. One study found that kids exposed to farm animals were half as likely to develop Crohn's disease, which is an autoimmune disorder.
Mm-hmm.
Or another one found that infants living in a home with two or more dogs and cats were less likely to develop allergies than their peers.
Anecdotally, I grew up with many dogs and cats, and alcohol and lobster will still kill me. But that's anecdotal. And obviously, in a scientific study, that has no bearing whatsoever.
Oh, well, no, but it is, you do kind of raise an important point. There are many, many, many facets to this issue, and anything health-related is going to be extremely complex. So, you know, there's also indications that any number of factors, from malnutrition to lack of exercise to pollution, could be creating these more allergenic populations.
Right. So it may be...
Allergic populations. Allergenic is a whole separate word, y'all.
Boy, there are a few people here that I consider to be allergenic. At any rate, the interesting thing here is that, you know, it's one of those, like I said, it could be a factor, but most people, I think... agree that it's not a major contributing factor. And also, it's way more important to be to practice good hygiene and cut down on access to things like, you know, bacteria that could hurt you, rather than to invite it in and say, let's go ahead and invite all the germs and dirt and everything into our world and make ourselves sick, and we'll deal with it then.
Well, I think that there's a happy medium between going out and eating dirt on purpose all the time and cleaning everything within an inch of its non-life, you know.
Right.
I think that there has to be something in between there. However, I do want to put in that one of the topics that comes up a lot when people talk about the hygiene hypothesis is vaccination. And there's some amount of rumor that vaccination is part of the hygiene problem here. But really, exposing your immune system to more stuff and thus making it stronger is good.
Yes. Vaccinations are very important. I mean, obviously... we feel very strongly about it, but vaccinations, they promote herd immunity, which is incredibly important if you want to prevent things like pandemics breaking out.
Right.
That otherwise could severely damage a population.
Yes, there's absolutely no research that indicates that that vaccinating is leading to some kind of immune disorder
right.
in anybody.
So bottom line is, guys, go out there and get vaccinated, you know? I mean, it's... No, seriously. I mean, there was a story recently about someone who went to Asia, came back to San Francisco, had measles, rode the public transportation system, potentially exposing as many as 4,000 people just in that time span alone to measles. California, by the way, very low rate of vaccination. So that was like the recipe for a possible pandemic to break out. So it's really important stuff, and it's not just so that you don't get sick. It's also so that the people around you don't get sick. And the more people who participate, the better off we are. You know, it's just simple science.
Yes. But this is all very slightly off topic. So
yeah, let's clean this up. All right, guys, here's the bottom line. We've gotten really good at creating very clean environments for very specific, applications. We're still trying to get better, especially when it comes to healthcare, so that we can make sure that we don't end up spreading disease while we're trying to heal others. And really, there's not such a thing as being too clean, particularly around your house. I mean, it's not like you're going to create a allergen problem using household cleaners and that sort of stuff.
Although, you know, don't worry about it too much, I think, is probably the moral of the story. Like, you don't need to be hyper vigilant.
Exactly. You don't need to be scrubbing the floor all the way into the wee hours of the morning every day. But at the same time, don't worry that by cleaning up a spill and using some cleaner that you're going to cause your kid to develop allergies that way.
Don't lick the floor on purpose, but don't worry if you happen to.
Okay. Wise words for us all. So let's wrap this up. Guys, if you have any suggestions for future topics about the future, then you should let us know. Send us an email. Our address is fwthinking@discovery.com. And drop us a line on social media. We're on Twitter, Facebook, and Google+, with the handle fwthinking. Remember, fwthinking.com is the website where you can look at all the videos, you can listen to all the podcasts, and you can read all the blogs or do any combination therein. Go and join us, be part of the conversation, let us know what you think, and we will talk to you again really soon.
For more on this topic and the future of technology, visit forwardthinking.com. Brought to you by Toyota. Let's go places.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
Good sleep should come naturally, and with the new Natural Hybrid mattress, it can. A collaboration between Lisa and West Elm, the Natural Hybrid is expertly crafted from natural latex, natural wool, and certified safe foams to elevate your sleep sanctuary and support a greener tomorrow. Plus, every purchase helps fuel Lisa's work with shelters and those in need. Don't put off a good night's sleep any longer. Get a Lisa mattress today for a sound sleep tonight. Visit lisa.com/iHeart. That's leesa.com/iHeart.